Let's begin now with the introductions from the Utah House of Representatives. We're going to be starting with District 53, which represents most of Summit County with the exception of Park City Municipal. We're going to begin with Cole Capener, the Democratic challenger.
Good evening. My name is Cole Capener, and I'm running for the Utah House of Representatives, District 53, representing the major political party that didn't nominate Donald Trump. A little bit about my background. I grew up in Weber County. I'm a product of Utah public schools, graduated from the University of Utah, and then went on to law school in the East. I moved to Summit County in 2001, and I live here now with my wife, Jane, and our small daughter, our young daughter, Rosemary. I haven't served in elected office before. My background is in the private sector. I've been an international business lawyer for 30 years. That's given me the opportunity to travel and do business in over 60 different countries around the world. I've had the opportunity to serve on a number of corporate boards, and I've had the opportunity to teach both law and finance at the university level. And I run a small nonprofit that provides assistance to families with HIV/AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa. So my background is different, but I believe it's uniquely qualifies me to contribute to the development of public policy in the state of Utah. The Utah House of Representatives have 75 seats, 63 of which are held by one party. And that one party meets secretly to discuss legislation. The press and the public are banned from those caucus meetings. I think that's totally unacceptable. I believe we need new voices in our legislature. We need open and accountable government. And that's why I'm running for the state legislature. Thank you.
Okay, your challenger is Logan Wild.
Thank you very much. My name is Logan Wild, and I am a rancher from Morgan County. I run sheep and cattle. In fact, that's what I've been doing all day is managing my herd. I have also been on the Morgan County Council for the past 4 years, in which I've also been the chair for the last three. I have been held numerous positions on boards and councils across the state of Utah. I've been a member of the Utah Conservation Commission, as well as the Utah Association of Conservation Districts. That understand conservation in Utah, I also was a principal legislative contact for the Utah Conservation Commission for a couple of years. You get asked a lot of why are you running. I like to serve. I have been serving for the past 14 years, whether it's been on treasurer for my local water board, for the culinary board, or I started out with the young farmers in the Farm Bureau. I have always liked public interest and public policy, and I enjoy serving people and trying to come up with solutions for the average person. I find it interesting that we criticize political systems and saying, oh, they hold closed caucus meetings when both of them do it. It just depends on how you want to look at it. So thank you very much. My name is Logan Wild.
Okay, let's move on to District 54 again. This is the district that represents Park City Municipal and all of Wasatch County. We'll start with Rudy Kohler.
Thank you. I'd like to start off by thanking the Park Record and KPCW for hosting this event. This is a little bit of my background. I'm a chemical engineer, worked both in my own business for several years, and worked for a very large corporation, one of the largest industrial gas companies in the nation. My interests in politics really started back in, maybe 12, 15 years ago, even further than that. Came out here to Utah with the intention really of just going skiing. Well, it didn't work out that way. Coming from the East Coast and having lived in many different places throughout my career, I saw that I believe that there's a better way of doing things, and started getting a little bit involved in how we can make some changes. My engineering background has actually helped me in this way, in that I like to see specific solutions. Over the last few years, I've been working on two books which enhanced my interest in politics. One of them was on government policy, in which I thought a lot of changes could be made, and the other was specifically on law. And these are works that are still in progress. But I think it enables me to, it gives me a background and helps me understand the issues really that face this this state. What I hope to do in this this forum really is address issues, because that's where my passion lies, in addressing specific issues. Again, my name is Rudy Kohler, and thank you all for attending.
Okay, and Rudy's challenger is Tim Quinn.
Thank you. I also want to thank the Park Record and the radio station. This is a great event to have so many of you out here in Park City tonight, when there's so many other things that you could be doing. My wife and I moved here 17 years ago from Georgia. We have 8 children and 18 grandchildren. And most of my career I spent in residential lending. We were licensed in 35 states throughout the country. We did loans for veterans. I did that for about 21 years. I had as many as 42 employees, and we were doing about $400 million in loans each month. And there were two guys in Washington, D.C. named Dodd and Frank, who decided to regulate that industry to the point to where it wasn't feasible for me to be in 35 states and have those 42 employees anymore. And I had to shut it down. I understand what it means to run a business. I understand what it means to meet a payroll. I understand what it means to have taxes that are burdensome not only for the business but also for the employees. And understand what it means to have regulations that drive businesses out of business. It's interesting, one of the things Rudy said that caused him not to ski and to get involved in politics is because he thought there ought to be a better way. Utah's number one in so many areas. I would find it hard to find a better way. We're number one in the economy. We're number one in unemployment. We're number one in businesses that want to move here and start here and operate here. And that's one of the reasons that I'm interested in running, is to make sure that we not only stay on that path, but we increase the ability to attract strong businesses here. Our population is growing, not only from people moving here from other states like myself and Rudy, but because we have large families typically in Utah. And those kids grow up, they go to college, they graduate, and they would like to stay here. We need to make sure that we continue to have a pool of good paying jobs that will allow the kids to stay here. I would appreciate your vote. Ballots go out tomorrow in the mail. Thank you all for being here.
Great. Hey, thanks. If you do have a question to ask one of these candidates, you could make your way up to the microphone. We're going to run through a round of questions for the candidates. Again, we want to remind you that you're listening to a live broadcast of the KPCW Park Record Candidate Forum. We're at the Park City Marriott on Sidewinder Drive. We're on the bus line. We invite you to join us. I'm going to start off with Cole Kapner. Cole, if you win, you will enter the House of Representatives as a freshman Democrat in a heavily Republican legislature. How will you pursue your legislative agenda in what will be a House of Representatives who will more than likely be of little assistance to you? And maybe you could identify a bill that you would sponsor that you would be interested in floating.
Okay, thanks, Les. That's a good question. And I've thought a lot about it, actually. And my answer is twofold. First of all, you have to reach across the aisle and to work with people of like mind. And even though I have criticized the legislature, there are those that are like-minded on a number of issues. I'm passionate about public education, and there are a number of Republican representatives that are passionate about education. And so I think, I've lived here, I grew up here, I think I can reach up across the aisle to form those kinds of relationships. Secondly, I think what we've seen in the state legislature is a disconnect between what the majority of Utahns want, as evidenced by public opinion polls and what the legislature is actually doing or failing to do. And I think you have to galvanize public opinion. We really have to get them. Education First is a good, I think, a good organization that's trying to galvanize public support to put pressure on the legislature to increase funding for our public schools. And that's something I'd like to do and like to see. I would introduce bills to try to make sure that our public is being properly funded.
For a call for Logan, you mean move down to Logan?
Yeah, we're going to move down the line.
Logan, regarding firearms, I don't want to ask you if you're for or against the Second Amendment. I think everybody's for the Second Amendment. It's a matter of interpretation. And I wonder how you feel about whether teachers should be allowed to carry guns in their classrooms or in school settings, and also whether guns should be allowed on college campuses.
Usually when it comes to guns and gun rights, I am a person that believes that we need to leave the laws right where they're at right now. I know that there's several bills being introduced, and they'll be fought back and forth, and they'll eventually end up in the courts. I think when it comes to gun laws, we need to leave them right where they're at and allow...
So yes or no on the schools and college campuses?
I think you should allow them to stay in schools where they're at.
Rick?
Question, I guess, for Rudy Kohler. Rudy, do you feel that the Utah Democratic Party does enough to reach out to LDS voters?
I do. And the reason is I believe that our principles really are a lot closer to what the LDS religion teaches than the Republican. For instance, we support things like self-reliance. We support principles such as caring for your neighbor in ways of furthering education, furthering things like Medicare expansion and such. These are things that I believe that the church teaches, and these are things that I think the Democratic Party actually wants to practice. So, yeah, I don't see a problem at all between where the Democrats stand and what the church positions are.
Okay, my question is for Tim Quinn. Many Utah legislators believe the state would do a better job of managing public lands than the federal government. Do you support the state's legal challenge to take back these federal lands? And could you be specific about which lands would be transferred from federal to state control and why the state would do a better job of managing them?
I am in favor of the state taking back federal lands. If you look in the Enabling Act of 1894, there's a key word in the ninth paragraph or the ninth section of that act, and it says that the federal government shall pay the state when those lands are sold or given back. And that's a strong word for me, is shall. If you look at other states, this is a Western states issue, Leslie. On the East Coast, this is not an issue. The federal government owns very, very little of states east of the Rockies, if you will. 66% of our state is owned by the federal government. 81% of Nevada is owned by the federal government. And I don't see the logic behind that. I think that in any issue that you're talking about in government, the more localized you can get it, the better off the people are going to be served. There's a big controversy about how much money the legislature has allocated for this legal fight. The numbers that float around in the press is $14 million. That's not what the legislature has allocated. They've allocated $6 million. They've only spent $900,000 thus far. And I believe it's a fight worth fighting. It's our land. It's not the federal government's land.
There's also the concern, though, I think, Tim, is what the state will do with these lands. And I think there's a lot of concern that instead of leaving them open, natural, and beautiful, that we're going to be using them for oil and gas exploration.
Well, I think that that's a possibility in certain areas of the state. Again, 66% is an enormous amount of land that's unusable. I don't think there's any question with what the federal government's going to do with the land. The Bears Ears is a perfect example of that. They want to take 1.9 million acres, the size of the state of Delaware, 3,000 square miles, and by the stroke of a pen, using the Antiquities Act, which was meant to do 100 acres or less. That was what it originated for. Now he wants to take 1.9 million acres with a stroke of a pen, heavily control the access to it, access that we've had already. And the local tribes who are down there who view that as spiritual land do not want it. They do not support it. And that's both Republican and Democrats. The entire county council does not want this. And I would agree with them.
When we look at, though, what the Escalante National Monument has done for that area, it really has improved conditions for people there.
It may have improved conditions, but it doesn't improve the access, total access that they have. And if you recall, President Clinton did several of these kind of changes in designation of the lands, and he did it from the state of Arizona because he knew he wouldn't be welcomed here when he made those changes. So, and I think Obama's along the same path. This is our land. It's not the federal government's land, and we should be in control of it.
Do we have some questions from the audience? Did you guys want to stand up here and, yeah, come forward here? Because otherwise we're going to start in with another round of questions.
Yeah, this question's for Tim. You mentioned that Utah is number one in business. Are you proud of the fact that we're number 50 in education? And what would you do on the state legislature to improve our education?
I feel strongly that we need to increase funding in education. I think everyone on this dais and everyone in this room would agree that we need to increase funding in education. We need to reduce class sizes. We need to make sure that our teachers are paid a wage and given the training that they need that would allow them to stay in the industry. 42% of our teachers leave in the first 5 years. A good third of that leave in the first year. So it's not all pay. They knew what they were getting when they got into it. While I think they're underpaid, I think they're undertrained as well. We require or expect way too much out of our teachers. Back when you and I were growing up, it was reading, writing, and arithmetic. Now it's reading, writing, and arithmetic, and we're supposed to teach the kids not to commit suicide. We're supposed to teach them to stay off drugs and alcohol. We're supposed to teach them all these social issues, and it's overwhelming to them. $1.6 billion of the $4.5 billion that we spend in the state never makes it to the classroom. It's all caught up in the administrative level. And I think everyone in this room would agree, the kids are what we ought to be concerned about. And that includes the teachers, because that's in the classroom. We could take some of those administrative dollars, and then we talk about being 50th. We could push ourselves up to 25th easily by just taking some of those administrative dollars and putting them into the classroom.
Well, he asked for some specific reason, or how you're going to now pay for teacher salaries and training.
There's two ways you can do that. There's two philosophies. One is to raise income tax, and the other is to expand the economy. When you raise income taxes, it's been proven over and over and over on a state level and on a national level, when you raise income taxes, you get a short-term boost. You get 2 to 4 years of increased revenue, and then they start dropping again on a per capita basis. If we keep our taxes low and we keep our regulations low, we'll continue to attract businesses here. We'll continue to add more people to the payroll, and that will expand taxes.
We're 50th in the country. Rudy, how would you fix it?
I take a very, very different view towards, I assume you're talking about the public lands issue to start with, or education?
Education.
Okay. Class sizes are far too much, far too large, and I do agree with Tim that we're losing these 42% of the teachers in the first 5 years. There's a number of sources of money that could be allocated towards education. If growth alone would solve the education problem, Utah has been growing just fine, and we're last in the nation in terms of per pupil expenditure, and we do have the largest class size. So growth alone does not solve the problem. There are monies such as that $14 million estimated for the state takeover of federal lands. And there's also the possibility of returning to a progressive tax that we had before. When 0.1% of the U.S. Population earns as much or has as much wealth as 90% of the rest of the people, that's where the money is. So with a progressive tax, you're not taxing the middle class. You'd actually reduce the class. You'd reduce the taxes for most people, and put it where those people that can afford it the best.
Let's just follow this through here. Logan, how do you propose to fund education? I mean, as we kind of had a consensus here that education needs to be better funded in the state.
I don't disagree with what they're saying. One of the concerns that I have, and one of the reasons I started to run, was what I see happening with our education funding at a state level is that when you talk to teachers, you can see that there is a big micromanaging of the funds that is happening at a state level. Money that's being pushed into special interest projects, to programs that are happening at a local level. Not always are these programs effective in different districts. When we have a one-size-fits-all idea of what's happening with funding, we end up hurting different communities, different districts, and the teachers and the students in the classroom. We need to kind of take the money and let the school districts and the local economies, the local people manage those in the best way they can.
You know, we are not actually 50th, but I understand we're 55th behind Guam, Puerto Rico, and others in funding education. And that's a travesty. And I don't understand why Mr. Quinn or Mr. Wild can say they're part of they want to join the legislature, and their party has been responsible for this lack of funding. This past year, Governor Herbert went to the legislature, proposed a nearly 5% increase in WPU. They gave 3%. It's been the Republican-controlled legislature that's been the problem. That's the one that have been failing to funding. And these two Republicans, if elected, will just be part of that ongoing problem. We need new revenues to really improve and guarantee our children a world-class education. We can do that by the new revenues amounted to, I think, $560 million this past year. They must go into education. What's happening is this legislature is diverting money into roads. That's inappropriate and inconsistent with our Constitution. We've got to stop that. And I'd like to see Governor Huntsman's flat tax break for high-end individuals eliminated. That will generate additional revenue for public ed.
All right, thank you all.
Yeah. This will be for Tim Quinn, please. The air pollution during winter inversions in Salt Lake City and other areas of the state has reached dangerous levels that force residents to curtail their outdoor activities and has arguably begun to affect the state's ability to attract businesses to locate here from elsewhere. Given your overall stance on limiting government regulations, what measures would you support at the state legislature to help improve water quality? Air quality.
I was in an interim meeting down at the legislature last month, and we had a report given to the caucus that the Obama administration's EPA, which I think we would all agree is one of the most stringent EPA administrations or agencies or under any administration that we've seen in recent years, and Utah is meeting or exceeding 100% of the regulations that have been put in place by the EPA. The study recognized and found that the largest percentage of our air pollution isn't originated here in Utah. It's originated from other states west of us and even overseas. But because of the wind currents and the geography, the topography with our mountains, it gets trapped here. So yes, we need to do a little better job on our own, but a lot of our pollution isn't being caused by ourselves.
Are you saying that the Uinta Basin pollution is not being caused by the oil industry?
No, I'm sure some of it is. I'm absolutely
and
sure
I
some of it is.
And I don't think that was within the EPA regulations.
From the report that we got from the agency, every one of the EPA regulations we're meeting or exceeding. And some of them, like the Tier 3 fuels, we're way ahead of schedule than what the EPA is mandating.
You can say that we're meeting regulations, but anyone who drives down to the valley and January or February can see that whether we're meeting them or not, it's not working, with all due respect.
I'll take that.
Right, yeah, there was reports, right, that the air was worse in Beijing a couple days last year. They're not meeting EPA regulations. But let's move on. Are there any other people out here that have questions? If you do, you need to walk up to the microphone so that I know you're out there.
Okay, I'm sorry, but I just do have to get up here. I cannot believe that you're actually saying out loud that we meet or exceed the requirements when our air is worse than China on very many days. I have a child who has asthma who has lived in Park City her entire life, who now is going to the University of Utah and has to have an inhaler every day because the air quality down in the valley is horrid.
Do you have a question, Julie, though?
Sorry. How can you say that, that the air quality is fine?
All I'm doing is reporting what the agency, the environmental agency at the state level has reported.
So the fact that we have an air quality less than China.
And I watch the Olympics just like everyone else. The air in China is horrendous. And there are days that on the other side of the Rockies, the Wasatch Front, there are days that the air is very, very bad. I'm just not sure what we can do about it. We've built a bus system. We've built a track system. We've encouraged people to carpool. We've had HOV lanes. We're not going to stop people from using their cars as much as we would like to think that we can. A lot of it has to do with the topography and that the mountains trap in the inversion on that side of the range.
Okay, it's 7:28. We need to wrap this up. So let's just follow that through, and probably in less than 30 seconds, all of you can tell us, what is it, though, then, that you have done on a personal level to be more energy efficient and help us keep our air clean? Let's start with you, Cole.
First of all, it's my understanding that Utah may be in compliance with federal required remedial action, but we're nowhere near remedying our air quality. And what we need to do is what the legislature failed to do this year. They were given an opportunity to give Utah the right to set higher air quality standards, just like California does. California has regulations that are higher than the applicable federal regulations. Utah, there was a bill before the legislature, the Republican-controlled legislature defeated that. I think that's a good start. Let's make our own regulations. That even should be consistent with sort of local control, right? The Republicans tend to like, you know, let's let the state make the rules. And we should encourage more conservation. I personally drive a hybrid. And I think that we should enhance incentives for people to buy new energy vehicles. That's just one way we can encourage better air.
Logan, anything you do personally to help the problem?
You know, just recently we debated bringing diesel emissions to Weber County, and I chair the Weber Morgan Health Board, and this debate took probably 2 years in a committees, and then it finally came to the board, and we took 3 or 4 months debating this, and unanimously we did pass emissions tests, and I see that local communities are actually passing stricter controls than what the state is requiring them for their local needs. And I see that the best direction to go. It is true that the EPA standards are very low, but they also understand that there, if you start requiring all these regulations, that it takes into, it costs your economy. And so you have to be careful. What can your economy afford, and what is going to work for your community actually needs to be weighed. And I've been, I'm proud that I've taken part in that discussion. Thank you.
Rudy, anything you do personally? Use your own shopping
bags?
Yeah,
a couple things. First of all, I totally disagree with Mr. Quinn that we are meeting the EPA standards. We are not meeting the EPA standards. One of the biggest problems we have is vehicle emissions over in the Wasatch Front, followed by both commercial and residential, and tail end is factories and plants. I've got 206,000 miles on my car. My next car is going to be electric.
Tim, not a word here.
Your question was, what are we doing personally?
Personally, yeah.
We drive cars that are more fuel efficient than they were years ago. We don't have any wood-burning stoves or wood-burning fireplaces in our home. But the point is there's only so much that we can mandate from a state level to what citizens can or cannot do. Several people have brought up the state of California and what it's done. California doesn't have clean air, let's be honest. And they also have $400 billion worth of unfunded liabilities because they've strangled their economy with overregulation.
We need to leave it at that because we need to move on. I want to thank you, candidates, and we can give them a round of applause.
Thank you.